Ahoy, mateys. Welcome aboard the Shallows, the pod designed specifically for all you 10-team and smaller league managers out there. I'm your captain, Eric Hinrichsen, and alongside me, once again, is chief mate Carson McCard. Carson, how are the seas faring today?
I was up fairly late last night, and I was able to check my weather app, and Eric, it was 55 degrees last night.
I'm sorry, what now?
So long since it's been like a nice cool evening, and I was sitting outside and just basking in the need to have a little bit of covering over my legs and arms. It's a little toastier now, but the 90-day heat extravaganza is mostly past us, so I'm ecstatic.
Nice. Does it get progressively just cold now the rest of the year in Minnesota?
Oh God, no, Eric. Oh, Eric. Oh, buddy.
Thank goodness.
My Midwesterners will know that this is, you know, just a lull, and you'll have false fall and second summer and the fool's fall and third sign. You know, it'll go. There's it's about coming. 14 seasons in the year up here.
Oh, that's awesome. When I lived in LA, there was one. Hot, well, yeah. Two. Hot and hotter. You know, here on the East Coast, there's at least three. Sometimes we don't really get a spring, but we do get a winter and a fall and a summer. So, it was a beautiful day out today, especially after the storms we had earlier this week.
I know. I saw the rain delays out there. I heard about it.
Yeah, it's a good thing. I was just going to say that it's a good thing that this week is an extended week for most fantasy players, because I think a lot of those rainouts were early in the, like, at the weekend or early in the week, and man, that can just mess with your rosters.
Yes. You know what else messes with rosters? Bunch of injury news and updates.
Oh, yep. We have those coming up for you in the captain's report, and we've also got some buried treasure for you. I said buried. It's buried. Buried treasure. Your Midwestern is rubbing off.
That's, I don't say that. You don't, that is an Eric original. Don't put that on me.
We are hunting for buried treasure. That's, of course, some gems that might be out there on the waiver wire for you to replace those injuries that Carson alluded to. And then we've got the beginning of our trade deadline preview. That's right, folks. The trade deadline, IRL, is coming up real fast. And guess what? In Fantasyland 2, your trade deadlines are fast approaching. So you're going to want to stick around and listen to that, because, man, I don't know about you guys, but I am very much in the position where I feel like every roster I have needs to make at least one move in a trade to be uber competitive this season. So before we officially leave port, we release a new episode every Friday. The audio version releases at 7 a.m. Eastern, wherever you get your podcast, and the video version premieres on YouTube the same night at 8 p.m. Eastern as well. If you want to see our beautiful made-for-radio mugs, so be sure to subscribe so you never miss an episode. Leave us a 5-star rating, a like, a thumbs up, a kind review. And don't forget, we're part of the Pitcherless Podcast Network. So check out the other pods we have available. There are new episodes out daily. Almost got through it on one breath. And visit pitcherless.com for all the latest and greatest content published daily as well. When we come back, it's the Captain's Report, so stay tuned. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Shallows. That's Carson. I'm Eric. And this is your Captain's Report. And I would just like to report that the view from the left field bleachers at Yankee Stadium is not only an excellent view, it is hot. Oh, my goodness. Yeah. I went with work, my team at work, my normal regular job. We went to the Yankee game yesterday. Cole pitched a gem, minus two home runs. But, seven innings, 11 Ks. He looks good.
Three home runs.
Yeah, three. Yep. But my boss didn't realize that he bought bleacher seats, like with no back, like bench. So not only was the seat was hot and uncomfortable, the sun was also super hot and uncomfortable. So you know who else is experiencing a lot of discomfort? That is Brandon Woodruff, out for the season. And we're going to just say probably his career, with shoulder surgery. He's got the capsular whatever thing again that he missed literally like 20 months with not too long ago. And this, to me, is one of the bigger what ifs of recent history. The other one I can think of just off the bat is Mark Pryor. Brandon Woodruff I know they're not exactly the same, but Brandon Woodruff, man, this is really a shame. Fought his way back from multiple injuries, Raynaud's syndrome. Now he's got the shoulder thing again, and man, this might be it for Brandon Woodruff. Carson, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, Woodruff, it's interesting, right? Because he's not that old of a pitcher where you think about it. He's 33, is possible to come back from this. I mean, heck, we saw this with Zach Wheeler this year, who's 4 years his senior, and Justin Verlander coming from 2 years of elbow issues, being able to come back. And, you know, Chris Sale had like 4 years where he pitched a total of like 50 innings. But with Woodruff, it being the shoulder, and if you saw how he had some scares in the year, it wasn't like it was bugging him. It was he couldn't touch 88 miles an hour on the fastball. It was like really, really problematic. And he's going to miss the rest of the year. He's going to be maybe coming back next year. That's a big if. And we're not talking April. We're talking like August, September. For a comeback next year, and it's just really hard for me to imagine Woodruff, if he comes back at all, is going to be anything more than your late career kind of high four ERA type guy. I think it is more likely that's the end of Brandon Woodruff's career. The comparison I saw was late Mets Johan Santana, where he had that second shoulder injury, and it was kind of curtains from there.
Yeah, this is not good. It's the same injury that he's already been through. I don't know what the capsule in your shoulder is, but it is a shoulder, and a shoulder is a very complicated joint, and shoulder injuries typically ruin careers, not to mention a second one of the same variety. So this is really unfortunate for Brandon Woodruff. I know this isn't the newest of news, but we have not had a chance to speak about it. And the way Milwaukee handled it, the GM was like, yeah, Brandon's gonna tell you all about it. And so I think there was like an expectation that he was going to like retire at that moment. But he's like, nope, I'll come back. I'll do it. He'll be 35, I think, when he comes, if he comes back. Not great. And honestly, I don't expect him to be back next year again. Same injury, 20 months last time he had it. You're probably in the market for a catcher if you like the Baltimore Orioles or you are the Baltimore Orioles, because both Samuel Basayo, who hit the IL with shoulder inflammation, speaking of shoulders, and Adley Rutschman to the 10-day IL with left wrist inflammation. If I'm not mistaken, this is Rutschman's third IL stint for a third different injury this season. He's not shaking that injury tag.
No, he's not. It's just tough to be a backstop, right? And Adley very much has a high workload, especially even among catchers. But he's definitely been banged up over the last few years, for sure.
Do you think long-term they move Pete Alonso to DH and Adley Rutschman to first base? Because Rutschman is supposed to be a phenomenal hitter, and you have to wonder how the injuries he's had in recent years are going to take a toll on that. Now, he has not been bad this year, but he can't stay in the lineup. Moving him to first base, you think a thing for the Orioles, maybe?
Well, I think for the Orioles, I mean, he might not play for them come August. More on that later.
Oh, interesting. Interesting. I like that. That's what you call a tease, ladies and gentlemen. All right, next up on the list here, Bobby Witt Jr., or Robert Witt, as some of us like to refer to him as, to the 10-day IL with lower back tightness. And as someone whose lower back is perpetually tight, I can tell you it's no fun. Can't get the torque in your swing. And this is actually his first IL sit in 5 years in the major leagues. So not too shabby. Hopefully a speedy recovery for Bobby Witt, but you're probably in the market for some shortstop help. More on that later. All right, and a bit of good injury news here. Jose Ramirez returned, sans a rehab assignment, and with no announcement and zero fanfare. If you're like me, who roster Jose Ramirez, because we told you to draft Jose Ramirez, I totally missed the fact that he got activated. Didn't see it. Was on my IL last night, and may or may not still be on my IL today. Because that was the sneakiest activation I think I've ever seen. That was wild. All right, so moving on to the top performers over the last week. First up, I think he's back. I think he is officially back. He is out of that June swoon that he had, and that is Drake Baldwin. He is 12 for his last 23 with 3 homers, 6 walks, and a stolen base. And I believe he had a 5-for-5 game over the weekend.
Yeah, that is correct. He was exceptional over this last week, just continuously having good performance after good performance. Drake Baldwin hitting at the top of the lineup yet again, being productive as the Braves are starting to get out of this little slump they have had.
And keep a lookout for one Ronald Acuna Jr. to be activated most likely tomorrow. There's no official news, no official news yet, but he's so close to being back. I would anticipate him being activated in due time, as they say. Next up, we have CJ Abrams here, 11 for 26, 4 homers, 2 walks, and a stolen base. Carson, I've been waiting for CJ Abrams to fall off the face of the earth like he has each of the last 2 or 3 seasons. Hasn't happened yet. Is it going to happen, or is this like the breakout for CJ Abrams?
I think he is overperforming, but as I pull up some of the metrics here, I also do think there's been some definite improvements. His chase rate has gone kind of steadily over the last few years from like really bad to bad. And honestly, that's a very significant improvement. and it matters a lot. I mean, just a little small changes like that can mess with things. Overall, Abrams has been really excellent and probably overperforming. However, I think a lot of the metrics under the hood have gone from, you know, just kind of an average hitter across the board and doing everything kind of decent or maybe slightly below average to he's making stronger contact more often. And there's a breakdown that can be done about CJ Abrams that's not going to be, we don't have the time for on this podcast, but nonetheless, I think this isn't going to be just a normal CJ Abrams here. He already has 24 home runs.
That's wild. Like, what? Something is going on with the Nationals and their left-handed hitters because they're crushing lefties, which is insane. Mm-hmm. So I think there's a new regime in Washington this year that's maybe a little more analytically driven.
Yep.
Maybe that's helped them out. I know the new regime in is it San Diego? Although AJ Preller is still there, maybe this coaching staff in San Diego tried
How long
to
will Preller be there, man.
I mean, they're competitive. They're the somebody.
They
in that
better be.
Yeah, right. Somebody in that organization decided to like tweak things with certain hitters. Their names may be recognizable to you: Manny Machado and Fernando Tatis Jr. I don't know if you noticed, but since Tatis has hit his home run, his first home run, which I believe was like May 30th
late
or 31st.
Late May.
Yep. He's basically been Tatis. He's got like 8 or 9 home runs. He's got double-digit stolen bases, and he's hitting 300. So he's hitting the ball to the pool side again, which is phenomenal. Also has the longest home run of the season.
Yeah.
In Major League Baseball. Would not have expected that.
Not to mention Machado is back over the Mendoza line and hit his 21st home run, I believe, the other day. So he's getting, you know, he'll have a 30 home run season by the end of it. And we'll just kind of look at this as an odd anomaly.
Yeah, absolutely. He is 34 years old, though. So turned 34 and we'll turn 35 next year, or maybe I have that 1 year ahead. But yeah, look, I expected. You asked me, was it last week or the week before? What do you expect from Manny Machado rest of the season to be? Manny Machado was my answer, and here you go. Look, he's being Manny Machado. And Tatis has been great, too. All right, next up on the rundown here, I know I've kind of bounced around. We don't have all these players on the list here, but Tarek Skubal next up here, 7 innings pitched, 0 earned runs, 5 hits, 9 strikeouts against the Angels. Little asterisk there because it is the Angels. He's back, right?
I mean, yeah, this is a great performance. I wanted to put it on here. It was one of the strongest performances of last week. Eric, we had a lot of clunkers from aces over the last week. A lot of clunkers. A lot of weird starts.
Yes. Why? What happened?
Very odd.
I know you covered that on the First Pitch Pod. Give us a little bit about that.
Oh, well, I mean, where do I start? I mean, Skeens had a good but kind of odd outing. Who else? I mean, Gerrit Cole had a really nice outing that just was maimed by a few earned runs. That was kind of the theme of thing. Christopher Sanchez had 20 whiffs and like five earned runs allowed, or it might have been three, but it was just weird outings where guys were being really effective, but not quite sequencing was on. Joe Ryan had allowed six home runs the other day in a start, which apparently is an MLB record. Very funny. It was a weird week of baseball. But anyway, Scooble, boosting his trade value if it can be boosted anymore.
That is absolutely correct. And last up on the list here, someone we thought was absolutely a trade candidate, and then his team won 15 games in a row. Aroldis Chapman, four saves, no earned runs. I don't even know how old he is. Does it even matter? He's like ageless, still throws bullets. I mean, he's so good.
Chapman's really interesting. I'm pulling this up to make sure I have it right. He's 38 years old. Chapman has a very interesting legacy for many reasons, but I think something that's been fascinating is how I feel like the discussion around Chapman has totally shifted in his time with the Red Sox, as he's gone from someone who was just a really good reliever that threw really hard to like truly all-time great, as he has two consecutive seasons with a sub-2 ERA, 1.17 last year. Weird thing about Chapman is this is by far his slowest velocity on record, 97, which for Chapman is like three ticks lower.
Yeah, that's true.
But he's compensated by having like a more bona fide four-pitch mix. Very interesting for Chapman.
Yeah, interesting late career development here. He's become an actual pitcher, which is kind of nuts because he was just a thrower for most of his career until literally somebody was like, how about you aim?
I don't know if that was a real story or not, but I choose to believe it because it makes sense.
Yeah, right. It's like crazy. It's somebody just supposedly the story is a pitching coach just was like, hey, how about you actually like try to throw it here or there, not just throw it as hard as you can. Which I'm sorry, but like, why didn't he think of that himself? That's what makes it a little hard to believe in a fun story that may or may not be true, but just hilarious. So Aroldis Chapman's been great. I want to ask you one last thing about Drake Baldwin before we go to the break. Is he the number one catcher in fantasy going into next season?
It's hard to imagine he isn't, considering that he's hitting at the top of the lineup, and that really does affect a lot for him. I feel like the catcher position is so weird, though. We've seen it so much over the last several years where the top catcher has shifted year over year. It was Adley a few years ago. It was Contreras. It was Cal Raleigh coming into this year. I mean, it has shifted wildly. So who's it going to be next year? Shea Langelier? Ryan Jeffers?
Your boy.
Ivan Herrera? pick a name out of the hat.
Yeah.
Dylan Dingler has been crazy.
That's like, true. Fun fact about Ivan Herrera. We're recording this on Thursday, July 23rd. Today is his first day off all season.
He needs it.
Yes, he does.
He needs it. He has not been great over the last few months, but
crazy. That's wild. For your catcher, this is your first. I understand he shifts back and forth between catcher and DH, but like not even one day off before July 23rd? That blew my mind when I read that. All right, when we come back, it's buried treasure. So stay tuned. We'll be right back. Welcome back to The Shallows. That's Carson. I'm Eric. And this is Buried Treasure, the return of Buried Treasure. We played this a little bit early in the season as we were looking for waiver wire gems to pick up that may become mainstays on our roster. Most notably, Jordan Walker. Least notably, Cam Smith. So... this round of Buried Treasure, you have some injuries that you might need help with. You've got some guys who've just perpetually underperformed that it's time to cut bait with. And so this is what might be on your waiver wire that may be worth picking up, whether they're just hot for a little bit and you juice the orange, or they could stick rest of season. So first up, a guy who was a roster mainstay for a couple seasons, been pretty terrible most of this year. And maybe it's because he switched positions, but I don't buy it when you move from one position in the outfield to the other position in the outfield. And that is Steven Kwan. Carson, is he buried treasure?
Stephen Kwan, if you've been paying attention, has been really good over the last couple of weeks. And this is the thing, when a contact hitter, they can go, especially contact hitters, or rather, maybe not contact specifically, but just guys on either end of the spectrum, whether they're full power or full contact hitters, they go on streaks, right? And sometimes they're just red hot and you see them lighting it up. But with Stephen Kwan, as I'm pulling up the numbers just to make sure I got myself right here. Basically, since the All-Star break, he has been just hitting everything, like hitting 500 type everything. And
yeah,
obviously that's a little insane, but it's the kind of confidence you have in a player's bat control that's pretty interesting. He is just being really effective at, and for a guy that had like an OPS sub 600 not too long ago, starting to really be effective, starting to hit the ball well, to find gaps again, not just hit it straight into the dirt. Your mileage may vary as far as like how relevant he is, but I think for batting average leagues, especially, it's a name to keep in the back of your mind as someone who has been truly the best player in baseball over the last week and a half or so at getting on first base.
Yeah, absolutely crazy. Do not look at Stephen Kwan's Statcast page if you don't want to have a heart attack.
Well, the thing is, it's like, I mean,
he's not one of those guys.
he's not one of those guys that's going to like tear the cover off the ball, but he's, and honestly, the lack of home run ability is worrying. But I mean, look at the whiff rate also. Look at all the contact metrics. Those are still totally there. And if he's able to not, you know, if he's able to deliver a bit more and not hit it into the dirt, but rather into shallow left center, it's going to work out quite well for him. And it has.
Yeah. It's interesting that his power has really declined each of the last few seasons. Same with the batting average. I wonder if he just hasn't been able to adjust as much, which is weird for a guy who makes an uber amount of contact. Like he is 100th percentile in whiff percentage. So when he swings, he doesn't miss.
Right.
It's very interesting profile for Stephen Kwan. Has been fantasy relevant in the past, and because he's been so good lately, might be fantasy relevant going forward. Next up, a guy, oh man. Okay, so to me, this next name is a player who hasn't quite reached the height of production that the fantasy industry really was hoping for him a couple seasons ago, maybe even as recently as last season. And that is Joey Ortiz of the Brewers. He fits their mold literally perfectly. He's like this with the Brewers mold. But he's also been just en fuego over the last week, Carson.
Really well. And I think a lot of things under the radar aren't that different from Ortiz a couple of years ago. A better IRL player than fantasy, to be sure, but he does have some stolen base upside in his game. I think what I like about Ortiz is he does have a bit of a mix of raw power and the ability to make a lot of contact. He doesn't hit for average, right? He honestly doesn't hit that much of anything, but he has the ability to go on tears. And over the last week, he has gone on an absolute tear. Is he outperforming a lot of his expected metrics over that stretch? Yeah, absolutely. But is he still hitting, you know, over 400 since the All-Star break? Yeah. The other day he had a walk, double, triple, and a stolen base. It's those kind of performances that can just be all around productive. And if he's going to get on base more, he may be more inclined to utilize that speed asset to his game. And that can really impact your fantasy lineups.
Yeah, you're going to sense a theme here in this list. This isn't necessarily long-term solutions here for you. These guys are hot. And we're at the point this season where it's like, let's get production. You're not going to replace Bobby Witt Jr. You just can't. But Joey Ortiz has done his best Bobby Witt Jr. impression over the last week. So if you have Robert Witt, maybe you put him on the injured list and you roster Joseph Ortiz for this hot streak, you know? So I think it's really important to kind of change your approach here. We're not looking for the Jordan Walkers. We are still trying to avoid the Cam Smiths, but we do need that like lightning rod from time to time, especially in head-to-head like categories leagues. I think that's super important. And yeah. Even in roto leagues where you may be behind in a category, if you see a guy is going off on stolen bases, Chandler Simpson, you may want to pick that guy up just until they slow down. All right, next up here, is he still on the Twins? Is he one of your guys?
Oh, yeah, for another week and a half maybe, but yeah.
Trevor Larnach, is he buried treasure?
Trevor Larnach's hitting .294 this year.
That's I believe it, but oh my goodness. What?
That's weird, right? Like, it's yes. weird for me, and I've been watching him play almost every at-bat this season. Not quite. I don't subject myself to that much Twins baseball. I'm not that crazy. But yeah, Trevor Larnach's been really good and just kind of consistently been good. Unlike a lot of other names I've mentioned, or the other two I mentioned so far, it's not been like a crazy hot streak. Oh, in the last week he has a 1400 OPS. No, he's just been real solid and continued to be real solid. And he doesn't have a lot of stolen base upside, and the raw power metrics aren't sensational. But overall, a very nice all-round contact hitter with some gap power that has outfield. You know, he's an outfielder. Every outfielder feels like they're injured.
Yes.
It's a lot. So Trevor Larnach, I think, is worth worth a mention.
Really interesting. Here, you don't normally see this is kind of crazy. In 2023, Trevor Larnach had a 34% K rate.
Yep.
In 2026 has a 17% K rate. Wow. You don't normally see that. This guy just having it In their career, period, like that. That's wild.
Yeah, change in approach, yeah. Going from a more three true outcomes kind to a more standard approach, and it worked out for him.
Yeah, more of an all around hitter, I'd say. I have at times considered picking Trevor Larnach up this season. Never had a need, but as I'm perusing, I'm like, I'm gonna keep an eye on that guy, and here he is on our buried treasured list. Next up. You probably need a catcher replacement, like I said, if you are an Orioles fan or the Orioles or roster an Orioles catcher. Gabriel Moreno. Again, names. Gabriel Moreno. Buried treasure?
If he's still buried. I put him on here because he's gone on an absolute tear. But and I checked. I was like, is this really in there? And I looked, and I think on Fantrax he had about 82% roster, which generally for shallow leagues is around where it's like he's probably available in half of your leagues. So if in that, it's worth a check. And if he's there, get him. Simple as that. Gabriel Moreno has been absolutely fantastic. Since June, he's been one of the best hitters in baseball straight up. Among catchers, he's absolutely been one of the best. He has a profile that is fairly balanced between contact and his power ability is balanced by his tremendous amount of contact ability, and he has really strong plate discipline to boot. So Gabriel Moreno, he's been fantastic. What's he even hitting right now? He's hitting .309
with an .844 OPS. Yes, just 7 home runs, but has contributed 4 stolen bases as a catcher. That's pretty.
It's pretty good.
It's not a lot, but it's something.
That honestly, for catchers, a lot of the time that's a fat goose egg. So that's not insignificant.
Yeah. XBA of .295, even though that's below his current batting average, 97th percentile. So like you said, Gabriel Moreno's been fantastic. Next up here. Can't say I've looked too much into this guy. Heriberto Hernandez. And now I'm just going to say something wild. With that name, I don't expect him to be fantasy relevant. You ever read somebody's name, you're like, nah, that guy's not good. there's zero fantasy analysis, and that is 100% gut and mind nonsense. But Heriberto Hernandez, buried treasure?
He's on the Marlins. That's probably most of why you're like, I don't know about this guy. But Hernandez has...
Holy smokes.
Yeah, huh? Yeah.
His StatCast page. Wow.
Uh-huh. Every time I do the First Pitch podcast and I go through all the games who had notable performances, Herberto Hernandez has come up a lot.
That bat speed.
It's a name I've kept in the back of my mind as someone who's just been steadily productive. And a lot of the underlying stuff supports it. He's got raw power and he's got a pretty measured approach at the plate. He's going to whiff and strike out a decent amount. That's just the kind of hitter he is. But none of it, it's not to the degree that I'm like actively concerned about the future, like I am, say, Esmerlin Valdez, who I don't know if he can hit a changeup, like conceptually. But Herberto Hernandez has been great, and he's been really good the last couple months. Pulling up the splits real quick. In June and July, he's just been absolutely stellar in particular. So far in July, OPS over 1,000. Been a little been a little sluggish out of the gates post the All-Star break on the sluggish side of things, but slugging side of things rather, but just a guy that keeps producing.
Yeah. His ex-WOBA is 23 points higher than his current WOBA. So expect even better performance going forward from Herberto Hernandez. Maybe I will actually have to take a look at him in some of my leagues. Again, the name thing just throws me off. Anyway, next up here, Jake Bennett, another guy. Name, not going to be good, but sneaky, sneaky good, actually. So, Carson, I think he's buried treasure.
I agree with you. I am a little hesitant with him, mainly because he doesn't get a lot of whiffs and he gets a lot of chases. Those guys I'm skeptical of because that's sort of, there's probably some deception going on and something doesn't quite add up. Usually those two are pretty similar, right? If they chase, they usually miss. But if they chase and they don't miss, that insinuates some issues with me. I do love and I continuously fawn over pitchers that have a really low strikeout, really low walk rate rather. And that's Jake Bennett. That's nice. I have reservations about him, but I also do think he has proven by this point that he is a starter in Major League Baseball, that he's a pretty solid starter. And I think you ride it until the wheels start to fall off or you get the check engine light on and you know.
Yeah. If you have Jacob Mizorowski, you can very easily roster Jake Bennett because Miz is going to make up for the lack of strikeouts just for Jake Bennett alone. If you play in a caper nine league, you probably don't want to roster Jake Bennett. It is an ugly 6.37 on the season, but the ratios look good otherwise. And they're not that far off from his expected stats either, which is pretty, pretty cool. And he plays for a red hot team in the Red Sox. So if you're looking for dubs, he might be able to get you some. All right, last up, Troy Melton of the Detroit Tigers. Carson, buried treasure?
As long as he's a starter, yeah, he is. The Tigers have quietly done really well in pitching development this year.
Oh, yes.
Not true for Framber, who has been terrible.
Doesn't need to develop. He's probably doing his own thing.
He
32
in fact,
years old.
If you tried to say, hey, Framber Valdez, do this thing, he'd probably glare at you and throw a pitch at you. But Troy Melton has been really effective. Casey Mize also really effective. And Mize is probably gone. Melton's going to stick around, though. And he has been good. I don't have a lot of great analysis here. There's not any big glaring flaws. The ERA, well, the ERA is sub 2, but you're thinking, okay, that's a fluke. How does the arsenal look? Generally really favorable. The stuff metrics are pretty solid. The basic strikeouts to walks are nice. I think there's a bit to be desired here. Expect a bit of regression going forward. However, I still think I'm getting a above average to well above average pitcher. That's probably or almost certainly still on your waiver wire.
Yeah, had a pretty decent game today. A little too many walks. Walks haven't really been an issue for him. Today he went 5 innings, gave up 2 runs, walked 4, struck out 5. Seems like he got burned by a home run. He gave up 1 home run. Too many walks, but again, haven't really been an issue for him. Troy Melton is he's pretty good if you lost Max Meyer, if you lost any pitcher or had a pitcher that started to underperform. Troy Melton, if he's on your wire, definitely give him a look. He's been very good. All right, that does it for buried treasure. We have some gems out there that you might have to sift through the sand to find some gold doubloons, if you will. When we come back, it's our trade deadline preview. So stay tuned. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Shallows. I'm Eric. That's Carson. And this is our trade deadline preview because, like I said in the opener, the fantasy trade deadline is fast approaching. The trade deadline IRL is fast approaching. I can't believe I said IRL twice, now three times in this podcast. Shoot me now. So you're rubbing off on me, you young folk. Anyway.
Don't put that on me.
I'm not putting that on you. I wasn't looking at you when I said that.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so here we go. First up, it is the most obvious trade candidate. We've been talking about him going to the Dodgers all season, but you have another take here, Carson. Blow it up for us. Blow up Scooble to the Dodgers. Where is he going?
Well, I saw a headline a little bit earlier today of the Brewers checked in on him. And I think that to me shows that, first of all, they absolutely have the prospect capital to do it. So let's not throw that out of the question. But I also think that this assumption he's going to the Dodgers, I still think that's a little preemptive. He should be the odds on favorite to go and wear Dodger blue. But I think there's a lot of teams that have prospect capital to work with, and they could totally throw a ton at it. If the Yankees really wanted to, absolutely. George Lombard is wearing Tiger Orange tomorrow. I think that's like people are too quick to assume. And I think this is interesting that the Brewers checked in on it.
I will burn something of mine that is Yankees if they trade George Lombard to the Tigers for Scooble. And here's why. That might sound crazy. Why would you do that? Why would you be upset for getting the best pitcher in baseball? Here's why. Because Anthony Volpe is our shortstop. Full stop. He's been Eric, one of the worst players in baseball.
Eric.
Carson.
What are you doing?
I would prefer not to trade George Lombard Jr. Just saying.
Anthony Volpe is fine, and you should accept that. Mm-hmm. He is not Derek Jeter, and that's okay.
I'm not looking for Derek Jeter. I'm looking for a guy who can maintain an OPS higher than 650.
That's fine. He plays really good defense. He does. Don't give me that. He does. Don't give me it. He's six outs above average. Six outs above average this year.
Really?
A couple years ago, he was wasn't he like a platinum glove winner or something Volpe? Stupid? He won the gold glove as a rookie.
He won the gold glove as a rookie. He won 2020 as a rookie. But he's not the same hitter as he was then.
He's been like an okay hitter. And by that, I mean he's not great. But you throw him at the bottom of the lineup and that's fine. Also, there's no guarantee George Lombard is going to be any better. Anthony Volpe was a top 10 prospect, lest we forget.
That's true. That is true. Yes, I agree with you there. All right. Next up, we've got a few names here. We're not going to go one by one like we've been doing for most of the show here. I want to bunch the Mets up together. You got Clay Holmes and Freddy Peralta here. Please, please trade Freddy Peralta. Get him out of Queens because it has not been very good for him there. He's broken.
Yeah, it's not great. Expiring contract. Teams need arms. I don't know if Freddy Peralta is going to command a super high price, but that's just something that like him and Holmes are probably going to be moved. Holmes, certainly. Peralta, I think, is probably going to be moved.
I really hope so, because I don't think Freddie's turning his season around by staying in Queens.
Yeah, not in blue and orange.
Next up here, we've got some other interesting names. Luisa Rise, Casey Mize, and your boy, Ryan Jeffers.
Rise and Mize are gone. That's a certainty. Rise, one-year deal. They can get a lot. It's a career year for Luisa Rise. They can get a ton for him. Giants are not competing. Casey Mize, almost certainly gone. He's a free agent at the end of the year, I believe. Having a really, really nice year himself, actually. I think his ERA is still sub 3. So, absolutely, he's going to be dealt, I think. I'm sort of basing, you'll kind of hear some names on this list. I'm sort of basing this off of like trade probabilities of an ESPN article by Jeff Passan earlier. And that's some of my own takes on this, but generally Mize should be gone. Arai should be gone. Jeffers, a little interesting. He's a free agent at the end of the year, though, and for him, I do expect him to be traded, probably to your Yankees, but, well, you know, we'll see.
Yeah, we'll see. I know that the Yankees have checked in on Hunter Goodman as well, which is interesting, but I would imagine that he would cost quite a bit because he's under team control for a few more years, but the Rockies don't keep anybody good, so wouldn't surprise me if he gets traded.
Yeah, who knows?
Yeah, who knows? I wouldn't mind seeing Ryan Jeffers in pinstripes.
Stop talking.
I'll shift to why. Austin Wells is legitimately one of the five worst hitters in baseball. So that's why.
What happened to him, man? He was so good.
Great question. I remember going into last season, everyone was projecting, you know, like a 20-25 homer, 80 RBI season because he was projected to hit leadoff for the Yankees. That did not last very long at all, and he's lucky to even be in the lineup these days. He hit a 60-foot pop-up that landed in the infield, and it looks like a line drive in the box score, but it did, he looks so broken at the plate and in his head, too, which is not great. All right, so those are players that are likely to be traded. Tarik Skubal, Luis Arraez, Casey Mize, Clay Holmes, Ryan Jeffers, Freddy Peralta, all rosterable players in shallow leagues. Yes, even Freddy Peralta. If you're in a redraft, depending on what's on the wire, you may think, oh, I'm going to cut Freddy. Wait to see where he ends up. Okay, so these are players we think will be traded. You really think Wilson Contreras is going to be traded, Carson?
We're going to see what happens in the next week. If the Red Sox go like 2-4 or 1-5 or something like that, then the little like this little stint is going to be forgotten about quickly. I think the Red Sox are riding high right now, and I hope they aren't getting overconfident here. Because lest we forget, 3 weeks ago they were one of the worst teams in baseball by record.
Yeah.
And even now they're 6.5 games back from the wild card from the division and barely holding on to the third wild card spot, a spot that is hotly contested. If they slip in the standings again, yeah, I mean, they could absolutely sell some hot bats and hot arms.
This is not a Red Sox front office that has done very well in trades. Lest we remember the Devers trade, Kyle Harrison.
That's not even the worst one because Chris Sale.
Vaughn Grissom's not even in the organization anymore. That's wild. Oh boy. Yeah, and not the same front office, same ownership.
We don't have to go there.
You know where I was going, right?
I know, we know, we all know. We don't have to.
For those of you who don't, Mookie Betts. Anyway, moving on. Aroldis Chapman. Aroldis Chapman on those Red Sox. Also, I could 100% see Chapman getting traded either way, honestly, because I think he would bring enough back to warrant trading, and Garrett Whitlock could just close. And I know Garrett Whitlock's not as good as Aroldis Chapman, but honestly, for this Red Sox team, I'm not sure if it makes enough of a difference. It would make sense to me to trade Chapman either way. Where he ends up is interesting because a team that he used to play for currently needs a closer because their bullpen is terrible.
That's like nine teams, Eric.
That is true.
Pirates. You're talking about the Pirates?
I am talking about the Pirates.
With the Rangers.
Yeah. No, Yankees don't need a back-end guy in their bullpen. They do. The Pirates do. Brent Hedrick is an ace in the pen. All right. Where do you think Chapman ends up if he does get traded?
I do like Chapman to the Pirates. I think that's kind of fun. Could be a bunch of teams. I don't know. The next week could totally dictate how teams are feeling. That's a weird thing about the trade deadline. But yeah, I think the Pirates are a fun team that could totally happen too.
Speaking about back end relievers, ace type relievers, top tier closers, Mason Miller. What?
Yeah.
Why?
This is the headline. This is the story that's developing. Miller seems like he's on his way out of San Diego, or at least that's something that's happening. Is the Padres are kind of retooling yet again. I cannot stand this move. I would be infuriated as if I was a Padres fan about this. Now, I have gone on record. I think Preller absolutely needs to go. I think absolutely what he's done to the Padres organization in the last few years has just been completely decimating any chance. Imagine, I understand hindsight's 2020. I get it. But you also need to have some foresight, right?
Yes.
Imagine imagine if the Padres had James Wood right now.
Oh, boy. Yeah.
Well, imagine if they had James Wood right now. Or, you know, imagine if, I mean, God, if you're really going to trade Mason Abrams, Miller, CJ, yeah, really. But even then, I mean, there's so many names that have been traded over the years that have done really well after leaving the Padres organization and kind of short-term gains. And I'm not saying there hasn't been great moves, but I mean, like, this isn't about AJ Preller. We don't have to make it. But here, for Mason Miller, you trade Leo DeVries for a calendar year of Mason Miller, and you're going to get maybe a top 40 prospect in return. Considering DeVries is like second in the rankings right now, it's a lot to ask for. And I know Mason Miller's really good, and I don't hate that trade to begin with because he has like a sub one ERA right now. Nevertheless, I think it's crazy to trade him, but that seems to be what happens. And maybe the return is truly monumentous. I don't like it.
I don't know. Like, first of all, where's he going where you're going to get what you gave up? I know DeVries has not made his major league debut. I know he's not,
I mean, for guaranteed Mason Miller, to be anything. Pick a contender.
Yeah, but I mean, if, because I've heard the Yankees are attached to him, right? And I don't mean to keep bringing up the Yankees, but
he does mean to keep bringing up the Yankees. Don't
listen. Do that. Listen, there's always a twin on the rundown. Okay, so you trade either Lombard or Spencer Jones, right?
Jones isn't going to get nearly enough, so it's got to be Lombard or bust, right?
Oh boy, like I don't like it for the Padres. Like you're still in the contending window. I don't like it.
They're also below 500, but yeah,
I know. But they're in the contending window because they're paying Bogarts, they're paying Machado, and they're paying Tatis.
That's the reason they're paying Bogarts, and that's one of the reasons, and Machado, and that's one of the reasons they should not be in the contending window.
Yes, I know. That is, man, I read an article earlier this week on trade trees, which was really interesting. Oh, God,
yeah, there's some crazy ones.
Yeah, there was one trade tree that lasted for like 30 years, and it started with somebody pretty insignificant. It was pretty interesting to read. It was an article on ESPN. And I would be very curious to track AJ Preller's trade trees just to see, like, the Juan Soto deal.
Mark painting?
Yeah.
it would look like that.
Yeah. I mean, if you think about it, Mackenzie Gore, James Wood, CJ Abrams for Juan Soto, right?
Don't forget Jalen Susana, top 40 prospect.
Yep. Was Robert Hassel III in that deal too?
Also in that.
Oh my goodness.
And then coming back was also Josh Bell.
Right. So if you then track trading Soto for Michael King and
Drew Thorpe.
Yeah.
Mm. King. It was King and Thorpe.
Yeah. That one.
And a couple relievers. And Kyle Higashioka was in there.
That's true. He was. It was
Soto and Trent Grisham going to the Yankees.
Yes, it was. Yeah, the gift that keeps on giving. Trent Grisham. All right. Next, I would be furious, like you said, if I were a Padres fan and they traded Mason Miller. Mm-hmm. All right. Next up here, we have a trio of players: Adley Rutschman. Actually, let's just deal with Adley Rutschman real quick because we talked about him earlier in the show. You think he's going to get dealt?
Catcher is weird. Adley Rutschman's been pretty good. The Orioles have an odd situation. I think he's a name that's been tossed around a bit. And I actually do think this is a pretty decent one. ESPN has it at a 30% chance. He's got a year and a half left on his deal. He's a free agent at the end of 27. I think this is a decent time to do it as the Orioles are kind of in limbo.
Yeah, I think this actually is a really good time to do it because let Masayo just hit, man. The guy can rake. All right. Now we've got two shortstops here to round out the players we think will be traded. And that's Jeremy Peña and Zach Neto. I think we're kind of all praying Zach Neto gets traded to get away from the Angels organization, which I also pray that Jose Soriano and Reed Detmers get traded as well from the Angels.
Yeah.
And then the interesting name here, though, I think, is Jeremy Peña. You really think Peña will be dealt?
The Astros, and we'll get to the Astros in a sec. The Astros, the Astros are weird right now.
Yeah.
They're bad. They are bad, and they're old. And now you're looking in the mirror, and we're saying it is 10 years since they won a World Series. Since 2017, right?
Wow.
You know, 10 full seasons. I know they won one in 2022, and some Dodgers fan in the comments going to be like, "Oh, actually, shut up."
Don't at Carson.
Yeah, whatever. You guys were, whatever. You're fine. They both ended up winning.
Yeah.
So everyone happily ever after. The only person that should be upset is Eric, because Aaron Judge didn't win an MVP. And what ended up happening there? He won like two more. So you're fine. Everyone's fine.
Hold on. Let me go bang on the trash can over there.
Yeah, whatever. You can go find Anthony Volpe in there. I think Jeremy Peña could be on his way out. That's definitely a name that's been floating around, as the Astros have zero prospects. So what are they doing? And Peña has quietly been around a little bit. Like, it's his fifth season in Major League 28. Baseball. Yeah. He's a real good player, but he's got about a year and a half of team control, I believe. So, you know, depending, he could fetch a nice price.
Yeah, I don't see why, if you're the Astros, you wouldn't rebuild. And we have a very interesting name coming up. I want to tease this and throw it to commercial, and then you're going to have to sit through a commercial to hear this. But we have two wild cards here of who could get traded and really upend the trade deadline. So to hear those names, stay tuned. We'll be right back. Welcome back to The Shallows. That's Carson. I'm Eric. And just before the break, we teased two players we think are wild cards to get traded and really could upend the trade deadline. They're not named Scooble. We talked about him already. They are not who you might think. Let's put it that way. First up here from, and we'll say even though, well, he wasn't named. Let's put it this way. When the GM came out and said, hey, we may trade everyone but this player, this player, this player, and this player. The next name that I say was not one of those names, and that is Francisco Lindor of the New York Mets, Carson. Trade odds of Lindor.
The Mets are selling. That's a given. This is a great indicator of how much they are selling, because Francisco Lindor is in an interesting space. The best seasons of his career are probably a good bit past him by this point, right? He was banged up coming into this year. He is well on the wrong side of 30. I'll pull up how old he is exactly just to make sure, but I believe he is 30. He's 32 going on 33. For a shortstop, that is quite old. He's not been great this year, although, like I said, been banged up. He's got a while in this contract, and I don't know how much they could get for him if possible, but I think this is interesting of like, how much do they want to commit towards rebuilding? Maybe this is a deal where they retain 50% of the rest of the contract and get a couple prospects. The Mets have kind of done some things in a similar sense with it, where they have taken on a big financial burden in order to get some prospects. I don't think this is going to happen. I think it could, and crazier things have happened, but I think this is a wild card, and maybe some teams are really wanting a franchise shortstop. Well, here you go.
Yeah, Gary Cohen, who is the owner of the Mets? Steve Cohen. Gary Cohen's the announcer. Steve Cohen can afford to keep half that contract on the books should he want to, just to get rid of him. I don't know if Soto and Lindor get along very well.
Here's what I think. I don't think anyone doesn't get along with Francisco Lindor. I just kind of categorically don't believe that. Have you seen him play baseball?
He seems like a fun guy.
He's a fun guy.
Seems like a fun guy.
Maybe there's some locker room things in there and clubhouse, whatever. But
I mean, he might not appreciate that Soto gets like this individualized treatment that nobody else gets. Could be that. I don't know. It's speculation. Things that I've heard. Anyway, this name I think will blow your mind. But we did just talk about the Astros. He's having a MVP season. He is having the best season of his career. Is Yordan Alvarez going to get traded?
I have a feeling it can happen. And I feel like that'd be really tricky, but I think I'd look at where the Astros are. They are beaten up. They are largely carried by this player. And if you look around that Astros lineup, it's just not very good. There's a lot of guys in there that are old. There's a lot of players that just aren't doing that well. They're 50 and 54. And that's after a 3-game win streak. So like, I don't think the Astros are really going anywhere fast. And I think this is the highest price you're going to get on Alvarez in a while. And I think there are suitors. The Odyssey's out in theaters, so I get to use that word more. there are a lot of suitors for Mr. Yordan Alvarez, who is the hottest name in town. You're getting the best non-Aaron Judge hitter in baseball if you're trading for him. I think that is interesting. The team I want him to go to won't happen because they're in the same division, but I really want Yordan Alvarez on the Mariners. That would be so good for both sides because the Mariners have the prospects and the stuff to trade.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it's going to happen for a multitude of reasons, but mainly they're in the same division. Interdivisional trades don't happen that often, but I mean, there's some.
That's a great call, though.
It would be so good, but like, it's also the kind of player that fit doesn't matter that much because you can just you'll deal with it. Like it'll work,
right?
Sure, you have a 100,000 OPS hitter in the lineup, go nuts.
Yeah, exactly.
I think there's a lot of teams that Yordan just totally changes the dynamic of.
Oh, 100%. I mean, it's just one of the best, if not the current best hitter in baseball with Aaron Judge on the IL and Shohei Ohtani kind of dealing with a knee thing right now. I don't see how, if he is available in real life, the real phrase, not the letters, in real life, if he is available, I don't see how you don't at least do your due diligence as a front office and make the phone call. I don't care what team you are. You could be in last place. You have to. One thing that I'd be really interested to see going into the end of the show here, I'd be really interested to see how teams approach the trade deadline with everything looming next offseason. We've already seen a number of young players, Chase Burns, J.J. Weatherholt, I believe Kevin McGonigal, Connor Griffin, all these young players that have come up in the last year, getting these major contract extensions, kind of buying out their renewal years and their arbitration years ahead of this collective bargaining agreement. And I really do wonder how that's going to affect the trade deadline. I don't know how many years a lot of players have left on their contract. It's just not something I follow. It's hard to keep up with stuff like that. But I wonder if a player like Yordan Alvarez, if he were to have more than 1 year left on his deal, how that would affect teams wanting to go after a player like that, knowing that they'll have to carry that money into the next collective bargaining agreement. I'm very curious what kind of effect that is going to have on things, because you're seeing teams trying to lock up players for longer at lesser money earlier in their careers. So I do think there's going to be something to this collective bargaining agreement going into the trade deadline. So we're going to wrap it up right there. We'll be back next Friday with a brand new episode. To make sure you never miss an episode, please subscribe. We're available wherever you get your podcasts. And if you have a question for us to answer right here on the pod, like, should I trade X for Y? Maybe. I don't know. I don't know who you're trying to trade. Hit us up with a question. Reach us on social media. Leave a comment on YouTube. Hit us up on the PL Discord or email us at theshallowspod@gmail.com. We will answer those questions right here. We're going to do some trade deadline specials as we get closer. We previewed it today. So, he's Carson Picard. at Carson Card on Blue Sky. I'm Eric Henderson at Eric Hinn on Blue Sky and Twitter, reminding you that murky waters are fine if you know how to swim. See you next time in the shallows.
Take care, you guys.